What if I told you that to make a radar system see the physical world with like absolute mathematical perfection, you actually don't need a bigger antenna, and you don't need to pump more electricity into the transmitter either. You just need to completely rethink the fabric of the wave, using prime numbers.
Yeah, I know it sounds like the setup to a theoretical physics joke, right? But it's actually the reality of where signal processing is heading right now. I mean, the limitation hasn't been the hardware for a long time. The real bottleneck is the geometry of how we transmit energy.
Okay, well, welcome to today's deep dive. We are unpacking a highly technical, genuinely groundbreaking 2025 research paper from the Eurasip Journal on advances in signal processing. And it's titled Discrete Radar Based on Modulo Arithmetic, which is a mouthful.
It is definitely a mouthful, yeah.
But, you know, if you're listening to this, you probably know that usually when we talk about a camera or a sensor, there's this this expectation of inherent precision. Like you take a picture of a coffee mug, the image shows a crisp white ceramic cup, and you just point and say, there it is. It's comforting.
We do like things to be visible and cleanly categorized, but stepping into the world of radar and physical sensing, it kind of shatters that whole camera analogy. We're suddenly looking at a sensing landscape that is profoundly murky. The physical world, it actively resists being seen perfectly when you're just bouncing waves off of it.
Right, which brings us to our mission today. We're going to translate some incredibly dense mathematical concepts from this paper, things like the discrete Heisenberg-Weil group and ZAC-OTFS modulation, into a crystal clear understanding of how the fundamental rules of radar are actively being rewritten.
Basically, we're looking at how engineers are learning to see the physical world faster and with unimaginable clarity by bypassing the traditional limitations of physics.
Exactly. And I promise you, we are going to do this without drowning you in jargon. We're going to keep it accessible.
Sounds good. Though to understand the solution, we first have to fully appreciate the fundamental problem here. So, in radar theory, there is this inescapable concept called the ambiguity function.
The ambiguity function.
Yeah. When a radar pulse bounces off a scattering environment, say, you're trying to track a drone in a crowded airspace, or you're navigating an autonomous vehicle through a blizzard, that returning wave is messy. The ambiguity function mathematically dictates the inherent blurriness of that resulting radar image.
Because radar isn't just taking a passive snapshot, right? Like it's actively sending out a continuous wave of energy, listening for the echo, and trying to extract two very specific pieces of information at the exact same time.
Exactly right. It wants to know how far away the object is.
Which is the delay of the echo, right?
Yes, the delay. And it also wants to know how fast the object is moving toward or away from you, which is the Doppler shift.
And getting both of those perfectly at the same time is, well, it's historically been a nightmare, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. For decades, engineers have been fighting against a foundational, immutable law of radar theory called Moyle's identity.
Moyle's identity. Okay, let's unpack this one.
So Moyle's identity mathematically proves that the total volume of ambiguity or blurriness for any unit norm continuous sequence you transmit is always equal to exactly one.
Exactly one.
Yes, you cannot eliminate the blur. Physics simply will not allow a continuous wave to be perfectly resolved in both time and frequency simultaneously. You can only push the blur around. That's the classical uncertainty trade-off.
Okay, let's visualize this because that is a massive hurdle. Let's imagine that total volume of blur as a fixed ball of clay. You can't just throw the clay away, right? The universe demands that the clay stays on the table.
I like that. The clay stays on the table.
Right. So if you smash it flat along the time axis, hoping to get a really precise measurement of distance, the clay just bulges out along the frequency axis, meaning you suddenly have no idea how fast the object is moving.
Exactly. So what you really want, ideally, is to mold that fixed ball of clay into a thumbtack.
A thumbtack.
Yeah, a single incredibly sharp microscopic peak of perfect clarity right where the object is, with the rest of the clay smoothed out into a completely flat, infinitesimally thin surface of zero blur everywhere else.
Oh, wow. Okay. So a massive spike exactly where you want it, an absolute flat nothingness everywhere else.
Exactly. The perfect thumbtack ambiguity function is basically the holy grail of sensing. But as the authors of this paper highlight, in traditional continuous time radar processing, molding that perfect thumbtack is essentially impossible.
Because the clay always rebels.
Exactly. When you design waveforms in continuous time, you inevitably create messy, overlapping ambiguity surfaces. The clay always squishes out the sides to what we call side lobes.
Side lobes, like ghost images.
Ghost images, noise, clutter things that completely obscure the real targets.
And beyond the blurry image, there's a massive processing penalty too, right? I mean, looking at the paper, crunching those continuous signals requires computational complexity that scales at a rate of b squared t squared, where b is your bandwidth and t is your transmission time.
Yeah, the hardware bottleneck there is severe. You are squaring both the bandwidth and the time.
So if you want 10 times the
You
resolution,
might need 100 times the processing power. Your onboard computers are just sweating trying to crunch the data in real time, which is a major problem if you're, a self-driving car trying not to hit a pedestrian at 60 miles per hour.
right. That is a literal life or death lag time. So if continuous time forces the clay to squish out and forces the computers to overload, it seems like the only logical way to beat physics is to just stop fighting on its terms.
That is the exact conclusion the researchers came to.
Yeah.
We have a completely abandoned continuous time.
And that realization transitions us into the absolute magic trick of this paper, right? Moving reality into a digitized grid using Zach OTFS.
Yes. ZOC OTFS stands for Orthogonal Time Frequency Space Modulation. The authors propose that instead of forming the radar signals in standard time, like a normal continuous sine wave rolling out of an antenna, we construct them fundamentally differently.
Wait, looking at the paper, it seems like they abandoned standard time completely. Are they actually building the wave in the delay Doppler domain from the start?
They are. They establish a highly structured, two-dimensional mathematical grid. On this grid, your intended delay resolution, how precisely you measure distance, is exactly 1 over b, the bandwidth.
Okay, 1 over B.
And your intended Doppler resolution, how precisely you measure speed, is exactly 1 over t, the transmission time. So the total number of distinct, non-overlapping information carriers you can squeeze into this grid is your time bandwidth product, which is just b times t.
Okay, so the bandwidth times the time equals the total points on the grid. Let's call that total number m times n. You have an m by n grid. But, and here is the specific detail in the paper that made me stop reading, rub my eyes, and just stare at the wall for a minute.
The prime numbers.
Yes, the researchers specify this totally bizarre constraint. They state that for this framework to work flawlessly, m and n must be distinct odd primes. Hang on, I was completely lost here. Are we building a physical radar system or encrypting a Wi-Fi password?
It's a fair question.
Why would a physical radio wave bouncing off a Toyota care if the grid dimensions are prime numbers?
I know it is a massive counterintuitive leap.
Yeah.
And to be clear, the radio wave itself doesn't care. But the mathematics of predictability care deeply. When you restrict your grid dimensions M and N to distinct odd primes, you unlock a realm of math called modulo MN arithmetic.
Modulo arithmetic. Yeah, I'm going to need a lifeline on that one.
Sure, let's build an analogy. Think about a standard clock on the wall. If it's 10 o'clock in the morning and you add 4 hours, the math doesn't output 14 o'clock, it outputs 2 o'clock.
Right, because it hits 12 and starts over.
Exactly. The numbers wrap around a finite, predictable circle. Modulo arithmetic is essentially just clock math.
Ah, okay. So instead of a wave traveling infinitely forward on a flat timeline, what the researchers are doing with the discrete Zach transform is taking that infinite continuous time and wrapping it around a highly specific finite mathematical cylinder.
The cylinder visualization is perfect. By wrapping the continuous signal around this finite space, we are forcing the wave to live on our M by N grid.
But that still leaves my question, why do M and N have to be distinct odd primes? Why not just make the grid 10 by 12?
Because if you use numbers with common divisors like 10 and 12, which obviously share the number 2 the math fractions out, when the wave wraps around the cylinder, it will eventually overlap itself incorrectly.
Oh, so it creates interference.
Yes, you get harmonics, you get blind spots where the wave cancels itself out, or these smudges on the grid where the math literally steps on its own toes.
Like a geometric defect in the grid.
Yeah.
Exactly, a defect. A non-prime grid is like a gear with missing teeth. Eventually, it slips. Prime numbers, by definition, have no common divisors.
Right.
So using distinct odd primes ensures that when the mathematical operations wrap around the cylinder, every single point on that grid is hit perfectly, cleanly, and exactly once. There are absolutely no overlaps and no blind spots.
Wow, that is brilliant. It creates a flawless, perfectly addressable mathematical arena.
And that flawless arena defines a structure known as the discrete Heisenberg-Weyl group. It is a set of absolute mathematical rules governing how delay and Doppler shifts interact on this specific prime number grid.
So we aren't dealing with messy, unpredictable, continuous waves anymore. The physical radio waves are strictly governed by the rules of this group.
Precisely. We have total control.
Okay, so let's recap. We've left continuous time. We've wrapped our waves around a prime number cylinder, ensuring there are no missing teeth in our mathematical gears. But now that we have this immaculate grid, how do we actually mold our clay? How do we get the perfect thumbtack waveform?
The authors achieve the thumbtack by identifying what are called maximal commutative subgroups of the Heisenberg-Weyl group.
Okay, we are back into intense terminology. Commutative subgroup. Let's build a ramp for the listener here.
No problem. In simple terms, a commutative subgroup is a specific family of transformations on our prime number grid, where the order of operations doesn't matter.
The order doesn't matter.
Right. If you shift the grid with transformation A and then apply transformation B, you get the exact same result as applying B and then A. It's an island of perfect symmetry within the math.
Okay, I follow that. Symmetry is good.
And the paper reveals that if you select a radar waveform that is an eigenvector of one of these maximal commutative subgroups, something incredible happens to its ambiguity function.
An eigenvector? Man, that's a term I vaguely remember from a linear algebra class years ago. But how does it relate to our radar wave and our ball of clay?
Think of an eigenvector as a wave that doesn't fundamentally change its core shape when you put it through a mathematical transformation. It stays remarkably stable.
Oh, so it resists being distorted?
Exactly. The paper proves that if you design a wave that is an eigenvector of these specific commutative subgroups, the math exerts total control over the clay. It absolutely forces the self-ambiguity function to take the value of exactly one at the precise location of the target and exactly zero everywhere else on the grid.
Wait, let me make sure I'm hearing you right. Mathematically zero, not just a small smudge, not like close to zero.
Exactly zero. Complete cancellation of the blur outside of the main peak.
That is the perfect thumbtack. The clay hasn't just been squished flat. It has been completely eradicated everywhere except the exact coordinate we want to see.
Yes. And to prove this practically, the researchers actually created a specific waveform called a discrete chirp using this modulo prime method.
Okay.
And then they compared its self-ambiguity function to a Zadoff-Chu sequence, commonly referred to as a ZC sequence.
And for context, a ZC sequence isn't just some random blur line, right? Like, it is a phase-coded waveform that is incredibly ubiquitous. It is the gold standard widely used in our current 5G wireless networks. It is top-tier, battle-tested industry tech.
Exactly. And when they mapped the self-ambiguity of their prime number discrete chirp against that 5G standard ZC sequence, the difference in the level of the side lobes, you know, the unwanted blurry clay squishing out the sides, was 100 decibels.
Whoa, we need to pause here. Here's where it gets really interesting, because humans are notoriously bad at intuitively understanding logarithmic scales like decibels.
Very true.
I want to make sure you, the listener, truly grasp what 100 dB means in reality. This isn't an incremental update. It's not a software patch that makes an app load a little smoother.
Not at all. A 100 decibel reduction is a factor of 10 billion in power.
10 billion. So earlier we talked about molding the clay. 100 dB difference is like taking that ball of clay, forming the thumbtack in the middle, and then using a steamroller to flatten the rest of the clay so intensely that the thumbtack is suddenly standing on a molecularly flat pane of glass.
That's a great way to picture it.
Or, in terms of audio, it is the difference between trying to hear a single whisper in an otherwise completely silent library versus trying to isolate that exact same whisper while standing on the tarmac next to a roaring commercial jet engine.
Exactly. The background noise isn't just reduced. It is functionally annihilated. The signal-to-noise ratio leaps into a completely different paradigm.
Unbelievable.
But there is another crucial physical benefit detailed in the paper that breaks a decades-old radar compromise. With traditional continuous chirps, you know, the sweeping frequencies radar has relied on for nearly a century, the ambiguity function inevitably leaves a diagonal line of blur.
Right, because as the continuous wave stretches out, it smears across both the time and frequency axes. You can't pin it down perfectly in both directions at once.
Right, you always had to compromise. But with the discrete chirp modulo MN developed here, the ambiguity function is non-contiguous.
Meaning it's broken up.
Exactly. Because it lives strictly on this discrete prime number grid, the blur doesn't exist as a smeared line anymore. It exists as separate, distinct points. This allows the radar to simultaneously resolve both the delay and the Doppler shift with perfect clarity on a single pulse.
No more diagonal smear. We can see the exact distance and the exact speed at the exact same moment.
It literally breaks the fundamental trade-off that physical sensing has been forced to accept since the invention of radar.
This is genuinely thrilling, but you know, there is a massive shoe left to drop here.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Achieving an incredibly clear image is only half the battle. Because if this prime number modulo mathematics requires a massive server farm to calculate the grid in real time, it doesn't matter how clear the image is. You can't exactly fit a supercomputer inside the nose cone of a drone or behind the bumper of a sedan.
That is a very practical point. But that brings us to the most elegant engineering payoff of the entire paper. The mathematical symmetry of these subgroups doesn't just clear up the image. It actually acts as a massive shortcut for the processing hardware.
A shortcut?
Yes. Recall that traditional continuous radar forces the computer to process data at a complexity of O of B squared T squared.
Right, the exponential explosion of processing demand that melts the hardware.
Well, by utilizing the discrete architecture, the processing complexity plummets from O of B squared T squared down to a sublinear O of BT log T.
Oh, wow. Okay, let me give you an analogy for how massive a drop that is. Imagine you are looking for a specific book in a massive, sprawling physical library. Traditional continuous radar, the B squared T squared method, forces you to walk down every single aisle, run your finger over every single shelf, and physically read every single spine until you find the book.
It is brute force, exhausting busy work.
Exactly. But this discrete math, the BT log T method, acts like an incredibly efficient Dewey decimal system. You look at the index card, and it essentially teleports you straight to the exact aisle and points right at the book.
The brute force search is entirely bypassed. Think of it this way. If your bandwidth time product is a million, the continuous method requires processing a million squared operations. That's a trillion steps.
A trillion.
Right. But the discrete method requires a million times the logarithm of a million, which drops the steps down to roughly 6 million.
From a trillion to 6 million. The computational savings are astronomical.
And the paper goes even further, showing how engineers can manipulate this efficient system using what they call symplectic transformations.
Okay, we absolutely have to define symplectic transformations.
Think of them as mathematical matrices that rotate the ambiguity functions on our grid. But the genius here is that they rotate the grid while strictly preserving that perfect, distinct, odd prime structure we worked so hard to build.
So it's like twisting the layers of a Rubik's Cube without ever breaking the internal mechanism or, you know, popping the colored squares out of alignment.
That is an excellent visual, yes. The paper gives specific examples of these transformations, such as linear frequency modulation, which is essentially sweeping the signal's frequency in a highly predictable linear pattern.
Kind of like a bird chirp shifting predictably from a low pitch to a high pitch.
Exactly like that. And another example they give is the discrete generalized affine Fourier transform, or GDAFT, which is a rigorous way of skewing and shifting the coordinates of the grid mathematically.
Okay, but what does twisting the Rubik's Cube with these transformations actually do for the radar in the real world? Like, why do we want to rotate the grid?
Because it means a radar system isn't stuck with just one good pulse. System designers can use these transformations to rapidly generate entire libraries of optimal radar waveforms on the fly.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the radar can dynamically adapt to whatever complex environment it's looking at, constantly rotating the mathematical grid to find the absolute best possible view without ever losing that perfect 100 decibel clarity.
So it's a dynamic living sensor. It's adjusting itself constantly.
Precisely. And furthermore, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the paper highlights that building waveforms using these specific symplectic transformations yield signals with very small peak to average power ratios. Or PPR.
Okay, let's ground that too. Why does a low peak to average power ratio matter to the hardware engineers?
Because massive spikes in signal power are destructive. If your radar waveform has massive peaks, you need incredibly expensive, heavy, power-hungry amplifiers to transmit the signal without frying the circuits or distorting the wave.
Right, that makes sense.
So a small peak to average power ratio means the energy is distributed evenly. The radar can operate efficiently on fixed, cheap, lightweight hardware. It proves that all this abstract modulo arithmetic isn't just blackboard theory. It translates flawlessly down to physical silicon chips.
It is a complete pipeline from theoretical number theory down to the physical antenna. I love it. Well, let's summarize the journey we just took because it really radically shifts how we understand sensing.
It definitely does.
We started with the unchangeable clay of Moyle's identity, that frustrating reality that in continuous time radar, you just cannot get rid of the blur. To fix it, we threw out continuous time entirely. We moved into the rigid, digitized mathematical grid of ZAC-OTFS, explicitly using distinct odd primes to ensure there were absolutely no overlaps or blind spots.
We built a flawless arena.
Right. Then we used clock math and eigenvectors to sculpt that clay into the perfect thumbtack pulse, achieving a staggering 100 decibel advantage over current 5G technology, effectively turning the jet engine into a whisper.
A total paradigm shift.
We broke the diagonal blur line, allowing us to see distance and speed simultaneously. And finally, that same geometric symmetry acted as a cheat code, dropping the processing complexity from a trillion steps down to a few million, allowing all of this to run on cheap, low-power hardware.
We are no longer shouting continuous waves into the void and struggling to interpret the messy echoes. We are mathematically formatting the void itself, forcing the echoes to organize perfectly before they ever bounce back to the receiver.
Wow. Mathematically formatting the void, that is an incredible way to phrase it. Honestly, you know, the next time you, the listener, think of radar, I don't want you to just picture a spinning metal dish on top of an airport control tower. I want you to picture a symphony of prime numbers and modulo arithmetic perfectly shaping invisible radio waves in the air around you.
It's beautiful math.
It really is. But before we sign off, looking at the sheer control this math gives us, is there one final thread from this research we haven't pulled yet?
Actually, there is one profoundly unsettling implication hiding in the math. We've spent this entire time marveling at how this discrete modulo framework perfectly forces the radar's ambiguity function to equal exactly one at the target and exactly zero everywhere else.
Right, the thumbtack.
That exact zero is what clears the noise and allows us to see the object perfectly. But what if a defense contractor or an aerospace engineer engineered this exact same mathematics in reverse?
In reverse? Wait, how would that even work?
Well, if the underlying math allows the radar to strictly dictate where the signal equals zero, could someone design an object's physical surface, say the hull of a stealth aircraft, to continuously and perfectly align with the mathematical zeros of this discrete grid?
Oh, wow.
If the incoming radar pulse expects a zero at a specific coordinate, and the physical material perfectly feeds a zero back into that mathematical grid, it would theoretically render the scattering environment entirely invisible to the sensor.
An actual mathematically perfect invisibility cloak built out of prime numbers. That is both terrifying and amazing. And it brings us right back to the beginning. We wanted the camera to perfectly capture the coffee mug, to get rid of the muddy waters.
Right.
But it turns out, if you master the math of the blur well enough to see absolutely everything, someone else can use that exact same math to disappear completely.
It's a fascinating arms race, mathematically speaking.
It truly is. Well, thank you for taking this deep dive with us. See you next time.